Lisa Davis. Welcome back to It's Your Health. Joining us today is Carolyn Coker-Ross, MD, MPH, and the author of the Binge Eating and Compulsive Overeating Workbook, An Integrated Approach to Overcoming Disordered Eating. A physician, author, and nationally recognized speaker, Dr. Carolyn Coker-Ross is a graduate of the University of Michigan's Medical School and an alumnus of Dr. Andrew Weil's program in integrative medicine at the University of Arizona. She also holds a master's degree in public health with an emphasis on international health. She has spent more than 20 years' experience as a practicing physician specializing in women's health and integrative medicine. Dr. Ross formerly served as the head of the Eating Disorders Program and head of integrative therapies at Sierra Tucson, an internationally respected treatment center in Arizona. She has authored 3 books, including Miracles in Healing, which recounts her journey of self-healing while offering a mesmerizing exploration of alternative and complementary healing modalities and healing body, mind, and spirit, An Integrative Medicine Approach to the Treatment of Eating Disorders, which guides professionals in an integrative medicine approach to the treatment of eating disorders based on the highly successful program she developed at Sierra Tucson. Her third book, which we'll be talking about today, The Overcoming Binge Eating and Compulsive Overeating Workbook, offers an integrative guide to healing from binge eating and compulsive overeating. Dr. Ross has a private practice in Denver, Colorado, as an acclaimed national speaker. She is a consultant for the Eating Disorders Program at the Ranch near Nashville, Tennessee, which specializes in treating multiple diagnosed patients, eating disorder, chemical dependency, and trauma, using the integrative medicine approach she pioneered. Dr. Carolyn Coker-Ross, welcome to It's Your Health.
Thank you, Lisa.
I'm so glad to have you. I really enjoyed your book. Very, very much. And I was, my last guest I was speaking with, Dr. William Stewart, who wrote Deep Medicine. I was talking about the fact that your book was helpful, even though I don't have an eating disorder, and just getting in touch with yourself and your issues and the things in your past that might be holding you back and setting you up for, you know, difficulties. And I wanted to start your book, or start the interview with a quote from your book. In the opening, you say, Melinda, a patient says of her binge eating disorder, I eat and eat, and I know that I should stop, but I can't. I eat so much that I want to throw up, my stomach hurts, and I have to lie down. Sometimes I feel like if I don't eat anything I can get my hands on, I'll explode. And you say that her words highlight the anguish that many people feel when food controls their lives. And that was just so striking. And if you can tell us, what is binge eating disorder?
Well, binge eating disorder is not currently listed as a psychiatric diagnosis, but it is considered part of eating disorder not otherwise specified. And basically, is people who, like the case that you just cited, eat large quantities of food in a short period of time, and their binging is associated with this loss of control over eating, and also just the tremendous feelings of embarrassment, disgust, and shame about how they're eating. And that's quite a bit different than what we normally think about, which many people call compulsive overeating, where people may eat a lot more at every meal, or they may be eating more continuously throughout the day. And both binge eaters and people with compulsive overeating tend to be overweight or obese, but there's quite a difference in the behaviors.
Yeah, can you tell us about that?
Well, I think that, as I said, the behaviors are quite different in terms of, the eating of that large quantity of food in one sitting, as opposed to grazing throughout the day or eating more at every meal. But also, people with binge eating disorder do tend to have a higher incidence of depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and other, co-occurring disorders.
And that's pretty common, isn't it, to have another disorder with the binge eating or compulsive overeating?
Any of the addictions are commonly associated with other co-occurring disorders. So even anorexia nervosa or bulimia have also a high incidence of substance use, depression, anxiety, obsessive-compulsive disorder. So this is very common. And often what happens, and you see this a lot in people who, for example, had gastric bypass surgery, that once they deal with one addiction, if it's the food problem, then the other problem tends to rear its ugly head. So they may have gastric bypass surgery, but then start drinking heavily or gambling or, fill in the blank.
I see. Well, that's why your workbook is so important, because you're going to get down to those deeper issues so they don't end up going from one addiction to another. Now, in the introduction, I mentioned the word integrative several times, and you also had done the fellowship with Dr. Andrew Weil. And yes. If you could tell us about that, and also, what is integrative medicine?
Well, integrative medicine really is the use of both conventional Western medicine along with alternative therapies for healing. And it really focuses on healing body, mind, and spirit. And it gives you a more whole person approach to healing rather than, you know, just the focus on either the behaviors or the weight, the number on the scale in this case. So integrated medicine really takes into account the whole person, and that's what makes it, I think, very a much more potent form of healing.
Now, how common is it for people in your field to use the integrated medicine approach? Or is this something that, you know, you have figured that, wow, this is really great, and I think more people should be using it if they're not?
Well, I do think more people should be using it, because in my experience, it really offers a stronger way of addressing this complex problem. You know, in medicine, we've been waging a war on obesity for I think 50 years at least. And when you look at the statistics, things have just gotten worse and worse. They are not improving. So what we've been doing, what we've been trying in Western medicine is clearly not working. We need to, you know, wave that white flag of surrender and look at other options. And so in my experience, the integrative medicine approach is a viable option. It has some of the scientific bases that Western medicine has, but it also, again, focuses on the whole person. So we're looking at obesity not just from that number on the scale and telling people if you don't lose 100 pounds, you're going to die of a heart attack or you're going to develop diabetes, because we know for smoking, for obesity, for addiction, scare tactics don't work. I mean, just look at that marketing campaign, This Is Your Brain on Drugs. It did, you know.
Brings you back to high school.
Exactly. It did nothing. And yeah. So I think this integrative approach, where we're actually taking into account the fact that there are most of the people we're dealing with have a 40 to 70% genetic risk for their obesity. So they're already fighting against that, you know, their genes. And they also have a tremendous emotional component related to eating and food, and for whatever reason. And so we need to deal with not just the, you know, their behaviors, but also some of the other factors that are involved.
Now, you mentioned the genetic component. Now, was that talking about people being overweight? Isn't it that they can inherit the disorders as well? Is that correct?
Yeah, binge eating disorder, we think, is about 50% inherited.
Wow.
And then obesity in general, separate from the binge eating, there's a 40 to 70% genetic risk. So it's like salmon swimming upstream. People with this obesity gene are always working against the current. You know, they have a harder time losing weight, and we need to take that into account. You know, in medicine, we used to say to people, well, just push away from the table or just exercise more. And for these patients, it's harder. You know, people who have that obesity gene, it is harder for them to do both of those things, even though that intellectually they may know they need to do it. So I think, you know, offering the kinds of support that we get through the use of integrated medicine, you know, dealing with stress, learning new skills for coping with stress and with your emotions that I talk about in the book, just being able to identify the triggers for your overeating and knowing, you know, what skills you can use to deal with those triggers. These are the kinds of things that we haven't really focused on in medicine before in working with patients with obesity or weight problems.
And to me, I mean, this seems like the key. You have to get down to the deeper issues. Now, in your workbook, you write about David, and he's a compulsive overeater, and Jennifer, the binge eater. And you say that David's parents fought a lot when he was growing up, and his mother would comfort him with food. And for Jennifer, her mother died when she was 8, and her father sent her to live with an emotionally distant and strict grandmother, and her grandmother put her on a strict diet when she was in middle school, and so she would sneak food. Now, obviously, they both use food to cope with their emotions. So why did Jennifer gravitate towards binge eating and David gravitate towards compulsive eating? Does that make sense? Like how?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to our earlier discussion about genetics.
So
part of that is for some reason, Jennifer was programmed to do more of the binge eating rather than compulsive overeating. The end result is the same, in that both of them are overweight and or obese, but how they got there may have been a little bit different. But I think their stories illustrate, you know, some of the complexities that we deal with in working with people who are struggling with their weight, because most of them have issues, particularly the binge eaters, will start binging in childhood. And so just like in Jennifer's case, she would go into the closet or get up in the middle of the night and eat when her grandmother wasn't around. And this started when she was very, very young. And so now we're talking about behaviors that have been in place for, you know, 25 years or more. And, you know, if we just try to plaster a superficial approach on that, that's not going to work, because food, in Jennifer's case, filled a very, very deep need for her that was not being met in other ways.
Yeah, you know, my mom was really into health food to the point where she went overboard, where she would buy cookies or other things, and she would hide them, like in her closet. Oh gosh, you know, in her closet. And I remember I would sneak in there, you know, to get them. And I'm confessing this, but I remember once she blamed my brother, and I didn't want, she would get really angry, so I just let him have. I just sat there. Oh my God, I've apologized since then. But anyway, because I felt, because I had all this guilt. I didn't want to get in trouble, but I also had, so it wasn't just letting him take the fall, but it also was, I just felt so guilty, like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have done that. It's amazing I don't have, anyway, we'll get into another time. I probably have some issues.
It's amazing you don't have a little bit of a fetish about cookies, because that's the kind of scenario where, you know, you might see a cookie and all of those little, you know, brain neurons start firing with the shame and the guilt and the wanting. And that's what I see a lot in my clients is, you know, they've forgotten the story about why the cookies mean so much to them, and yet they still are acting from that story.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about your book, is that you get them to ask deep questions to, you know, get them more aware of what you were, that the core beliefs, and that is something that if you can talk about that, that's really key too.
Yeah, the core beliefs, you mentioned the case of David, and he was a good example of core beliefs, because for him, food really was love. You know, whenever he had a lot of problems or some stress at school or, you know, whatever was happening, his mom would take him in the kitchen and they would eat cookies and cake and, you know, and she would talk to him about his problems. And so for him, food really was deeply connected with that relationship with his mom, and how she taught him or modeled for him how to deal with his problems. And so his core belief really was that food is love. For other people, food can be safety, and that may be their core belief. The weight may represent a safe place to be. In other words, the weight may be a cushion against you know, horrible things that may have happened to them in their lives. It may feel protective to them to be overweight. So whatever that core belief is, it really continues to drive the behaviors. And most of the time, the core beliefs are formed in periods of time when the person was either younger and didn't have good coping skills, or in periods of trauma or high emotion. And then usually they're forgotten, you know, so the person who had a mom who sat him down at the kitchen table, he didn't make that connection, really. All he knew is that when he sat down to eat, when he was stressed out, he felt good. And so helping people to make that connection and identify that core belief, and then find out if the core belief still serves them. When that initially happened, when David was young and he was sitting down with his mom, that really served him, but it doesn't serve him now as an adult to continue to turn to food to deal with his problems. So we need then to shift the core belief into one that is more appropriate for him at this point.
Now, how does one go about doing that, to shift that core belief?
Well, it's a combination of several different stages. The first stage is what we're talking about, which is to become aware that you have that core belief and that that core belief, you know, is running your program. In other words, it's running your life. Once you become aware of it, then the next step really is to determine and to really deeply recognize that and honor, in a way, that the core belief served you so well. It kept you safe, it kept you happy, it helped you through tough times. So you don't want to make a judgment about it and say, that's bad and I'm going to find something that's good. You really want to honor it, and then you come to recognize that it no longer serves you, and then you develop out of your own current life a new belief. So for David, it could be, you know, I no longer need food to solve my emotional problems. I want to find other ways to do that. And so, you know, his core belief then became, I eat for good health, not for emotions. So it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight, and it's something that people will work on, you know, over time, and it'll come up over and over. But as long as you're aware of it and have a stated commitment to change that and not to fall back on that, because that's the fallback. That's the easy thing to go to. And so it takes a little bit of time to change any behavior, as you know.
Yeah, and especially if we, as we talked about earlier, if you have another diagnosis with it. And if you can talk to us about some of those, and also some medications and also some different therapies that are helpful.
Some of the medications that are helpful for treating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
okay. Well, I mentioned earlier that substance use disorders, also depression, anxiety, are common in people who have either compulsive reading or binge eating disorder. And, of course, there are many medications that have been tried to treat obesity, and most of them have really been, in my opinion, a dismal failure, including, either they've worked well but had tremendous side effects, such as the Fen-Phen debacle, you know, back a decade or two ago, or they work temporarily, such as the appetite suppressants, and then as soon as the person gets off of them, they have rebound weight gain. So there really aren't any prescription medicines that have been shown to consistently and effectively treat either binge eating disorder or compulsive overeating. We have used medications like Prozac and the other SSRIs, which can help with depression and anxiety, and of course that's very important. But there are also many, many now alternative therapies to use to help support mood. In the book, I talk about, you know, the use of omega-3 fatty acids, the B vitamins. All of those have an integral role, either with or without medication. For example, many people are prescribed drugs like Prozac, but what most people don't know is that in order to really make serotonin in the brain, you have to have enough B vitamins in your system. And these B vitamins support the effectiveness of the medication, and or they support your body's ability to make serotonin itself. There are natural amino acids that we use now that help make serotonin in the brain, such as L-tryptophan, which is it's an amino acid that then is converted in the brain to serotonin. 5-hydroxytryptophan is also a serotonin precursor. So these are some of the other options that people can explore, as well as over-the-counter antidepressants such as St. John's Wort and SAM-E. So I like to, you know, to really use a combination, again, of the alternative therapies as well as the conventional therapies.
No, it's funny because I was thinking, like, after I asked the medication question, I was going to definitely ask, and what about, you know, the natural alternatives? And it's so great that you're so well-versed in this, having your background with the integrative, you know, medicine. The other problems, too, with the, you know, the Fen-Phen was, of course, a disaster. But, you know, if you're taking a Dexatrim or something like that, you're still not under, you're not getting to the issues. And
yeah.
Something I wanted to ask you about is, you know, I do like the, I actually love the TV show, The Biggest Loser. I find it very inspirational and seeing people change.
Yeah.
And I happen to have a lot of folks on The Biggest Loser on my show. And I've gotten some mail, though, that people, they think, well, they're in this controlled environment and the weight loss is too fast. And, you know, but I still find it to be inspirational. I'm curious. I mean, even if, you know, perhaps they're not going deep enough, but hopefully once they leave the ranch, they will. What do you think about shows like that?
Well, I really think it's a great show, and I think there's a couple of other new shows also. That there's one about dancing your way to weight loss.
Oh, Dance Your
I don't remember the name of it. And then there's another one about, you know, it's the bachelor for the kind of an overweight bachelor program.
Oh, I heard about that. I wanted to see that.
I love that. I love all of those shows. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really good about the shows is it is trying to destigmatize obesity. I think one of the biggest problems that people who suffer with obesity or who are even overweight have is being teased and bullied when they're younger, being ignored, passed over for promotions, criticized by the medical profession when they get older. And I think these shows humanize people, because just because you're overweight doesn't mean you're any different than anyone else. And I really like the fact that they're showing, you know, the personal side of people who have a weight problem. So
yeah, well, you know, Carolyn, I definitely want to have you back because we have so much more to talk about. And I apologize about I gave her the wrong time, everyone. This was my fault.
Oh,
we started
okay.
late. So I would love to have you back on. And how can people find out more and get in contact with you?
Well, my website is a good way to start, and that is www.carolynrossmd.com, carolynrossmd.com. And my contact information is there. I also have some of the products that I've developed that I use in my weight management program, and all of the books are available there. And you can also get my book on Amazon.com. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, Lisa. It was great talking with you.
Well, thank you. Well, I want to have you come back in January. I'm devoting the whole month to people who've made big changes, and I also want to have some professionals to help those who are still working on it. So I will get in touch with you about that. Thank you so much, everyone. Everyone, have a terrific week. Keep being healthy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.